Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
The people I want to surround myself with are those people that smile a bit easier, laugh a bit easier, and are happy to be vulnerable and open, because I think that's where you make the really interesting connections.
Welcome to the Humorology Podcast with me, Paul Barros, and my glittering lineup of guests from the worlds of business, sport and entertainment, who are here to share their wisdom and their use of humour with you. Humorology is the study of how humour can dramatically improve your business success and your life. Humorology puts the fun into business fundamentals, increases the value of your laughing stock, and puts a punchline back into your bottom line. Please remember to like, subscribe, and leave a review wherever you get your podcasts. My guest on this edition of the Humorology Podcast is a political pundit and journalist who is well known for sharing her unapologetic takes on the British government. She began her career in the Twitterverse and now has nearly a quarter of a million followers. In addition to providing insightful and thought-provoking political commentary, she has been featured on many political talk shows, including Channel 5's The Jeremy Vine Show, Piers Morgan Uncensored, and as the host of The Table on Byline TV. She is also the co-host and creator with Gemma Forte of the political podcast The Trawl, where they doom-scroll the political side of Twitter so you don't have to. Marina Perkis, welcome to the Humorology Podcast.
Thank you, Paul. That was a wonderful intro.
Well,
the best I've had.
Well, bless you. It's all just true, though, and I'm a big fan. I really enjoy your tweets, and I follow you on both sort of Jeremy Vine and I've seen you on The Table. Fantastic stuff. But I'd like to take you right back to the beginning, your early years. When you were growing up, I understand that you were from first generation Italian parents. Was humour actually valued in the family?
My parents are very strict. So they are Sicilian immigrants, Catholic, church every Sunday, you know, no sleepovers allowed. They really made us work. But it was joyous as well. I make it sound awful, but there wasn't too much humour. But if I look back now, Mum was very serious. Dad was very serious as well, because there was such pressure to earn money. We weren't well off at all. Dad was working all kinds of jobs. Mum did whatever she could as well. So I don't think humour was a massive feature. But I think for me, Paul, I was a real ugly duckling. Let's put it that way. And when you're an ugly duckling, you really have to develop a personality. Otherwise, you're going to struggle through school. So I think that's where humour became something to nurture and to really leverage for me.
So how did that affect you at school? I mean, were you the centre of attention? Did you have what they'd call a show-off gene?
No, I certainly wasn't the centre of attention, but I suppose that was the only way I could, you know, get people to take an interest in me, I guess. Because I was the very sort of chubby, you know, very dark haired, big, thick eyebrows, very much an Italian child. And you've got to stand out one way or another. And that was my way, I guess, of trying to be sort of dominant and a little bit funny.
Well, you say a little bit funny. So, I mean, how old were you when you realised that humor could be the way to forge better relationships?
Honestly, I think it's something that's still growing now. I think I'm noticing it more and more, and it's not something I've ever tried to be. I just think I'm seeing now that it's a really great way to forge relationships. And I think actually exposes you, because the moment you're happy to put yourself out there and be vulnerable in being funny, I think people see that there is an in and there is a way to connect with you rather than always being a very serious person.
I think that's very true. And that's what the whole Humorology project is all around, is how that humour can be that bridge between people. Now, humour I'm talking about is the lightness of touch, the, you know, the love, the connection. But you also talked about your parents being hardworking. Was that determination, that resilience and broad humour forged by their environment and their beginnings?
I don't think so. Sadly not. I think my mum and dad had quite a tough upbringing, so we didn't see that much lightness, if I'm honest. What I will say is my dad now in retirement is a far more, he's a much less serious character than he was, and he can have a laugh. And to be honest, I think a lot of it is linked to the fact that he makes his own wine pool. He has a good supply of homemade wine, and I think that helps him in terms of, like, you know, laughing that bit easier. And so I'd like to think I've probably got a bit of that from my dad, but mum is very serious person.
It's interesting that you keep saying your mum's a very serious person. So the family had sort of two sides to it, didn't they? Because there's a saying that families that laugh together stay together, but you're showing the other side of it.
Oh, God, it sounds awful, but I don't remember much laughter growing up. It was all a bit hard knocks, you know. It was quite tough growing up. We didn't have everything. And mum and dad were really under pressure. Like, every penny was saved.
But that's the immigrant story, isn't it?
Yeah,
you've got
absolutely
to work sort of two or three times as hard in order to move forward. And I get that. Well, it's funny because I talk about my father's immigrant story, because when my father was 17, he was already in the Second World War. He's been dead 6 years now. And, you know, then there was the uprising in Hungary when the Russians came in and he had to escape and everything. But my father had this strange joy, and he said, "I'm lucky." And he'd probably had one of the unluckiest lives of anybody he knew because he'd been through wars and uprisings and had to escape and camps and things and refugee status and making a new life for himself. So how much do you think attitude is important to moving forward?
Oh, absolutely huge. Huge. And I think people that practice things like gratitude and people that understand how fortunate they are, I think, much more inclined to be happier people and to laugh a little bit easier. And I'd like to think that's me. So when I look around, in fact, I'm not religious. Even though I was brought up with Sicilian Catholic parents, I suppose I used to be religious, used to believe there was a God, used to go to bed and say a prayer every night. And I still do, but it's not necessarily to a God or a what, it's just to put it out there to the universe. And I'm always all I do is say thank you. Thank you for my amazing husband, my amazing family, my health, everything, my job, everything that I'm grateful for. And I think being appreciative and having that attitude is the one that paves the way for really good things, because I think people respond well to people who are positive, who have got high energy, who they like to be around. Even in my work, whether that's my day job, which has nothing to do, by the way, with the political commentary, or whether it is in this new sort of showbiz glitzy political, you know, venture, the people I want to surround myself with are those people that smile a bit easier, laugh a bit easier, and are happy to be vulnerable and open, because I think that's where you make the really interesting connections.
I love that whole attitude of gratitude thing, but I think it's very true, and the whole Humorology project is around what are those
differences that make a difference, and why are people successful? And do you think that just that easy laughter, the people who laugh easiest, who can laugh at themselves, actually, is it important, you think, to be able to laugh at yourself?
I think so. And I think actually, this is interesting. So if you look at the different types of leadership, you've got leadership, like, for example, I've worked in businesses where the bosses have been, you know, not able to laugh at themselves, very serious. They rule with an iron fist. You know, there's no self-deprecation there whatsoever. And I think that fosters an environment that's just not conducive to people being at ease, people being able to bring their true selves to work. And it's a bit driven by ego at the top. Whereas actually, I've then worked for bosses and leaders who aren't like that, who can show vulnerability, who can laugh a little bit easier. I mean, you don't want a buffoon, of course. We've just had a buffoon who's just left, number 10, of course. But you want someone who can just smile at the funny things, and who can just be a little bit vulnerable every now and then, who can make a little bit of a joke. And I think also, work needs to be a place where you can have a laugh. The amount of time, the amount of hours that we spend at work, it needs to be an environment that you're happy in. And when I'm happy, I'm most productive. So that's why I think it's very important to have that type of leadership style.
Oh, we've had William Hague, who was superb on the podcast, and he said he knew Thatcher, and he said she was not funny. She didn't have a sense of humour. And I just wonder, is that now going to be a hindrance? Because do modern day politicians have to have charisma, have to have a sense of humour in order to really connect with the public?
Well, interestingly, I think this is where, because we are sliding more and more towards populism, I think this perception of a leader having to be funny or entertaining is becoming more and more of a thing, because we're almost blending our entertainment and our politics. You look across the Atlantic to Trump, who was basically a, you know, TV star. He was a reality show TV star. And then you look over here and, you know, you see vox pops, for example, up and down the country of why people like Boris Johnson or liked Boris Johnson. And it was because they thought they could go for a pint with him, or they liked his funny hair, or they thought he was funny just in general. And actually, I've said this before on my Twitter, you know, if you want to a clown, go to the circus.
I love your Twitter feed, and I encourage everybody to go and look at it, because you do argue with passion, with humanity, for social justice. But wit is really important in that mix, because I think that's what gives you the cut through. And do you think that people's attention spans are that much shorter now, that they need a quick jibe, if you like?
Teeny tiny. I've got it as well. I have to jewel three in these days, because it's almost like one piece of content isn't enough. I need to have two pieces of content on the go, or I can't just be doing my hair. I have to be listening to a podcast at the same time. If it's dead time, it's wasted time. So if you can deliver information and you can entertain at the same time, this is where you're winning. And this is where I think Boris Johnson, as much as I despair at him, he had something, because he could land a message through humour, through wit. And I think what we're seeing, sadly, if you look at the opposition, for example, you know, Keir Starmer gets criticised because there's lack of charisma. People think he's dull. And it's a shame, because leaders, it's fine if they're dull, but actually people are looking for someone to connect with them. And humour and wit is a great way for them to do that.
Well, do you think that Labour is missing a trick by not actually putting the people who are more naturally charismatic and more naturally witty up for those positions?
I think time will tell. I've been quite disappointed with Keir Starmer. I'm just desperate for the Tory government to be out, and obviously it looks like Labour are the people to replace. Keir Starmer's let me down, but I think that's more of a policy thing. I'm not let down so much by his charisma, more of his, you know, not standing shoulder to shoulder with the unions, not talking a bit more open-mindedly about the single market and customs union, that sort of thing. And I suppose a bit of it is charisma, because look, the British public clearly have an appetite for a leader with charisma. And it looks like Starmer is falling short there. So perhaps, I mean, who would be the Labour Party candidate who is funny?
I think there, Jess Phillips, for instance, mm-hmm. is fun and funny. I've met Jess and she's, you know, but is she too out there for the general public? Is everybody scared that humour, suddenly you'll go, you know, they'll turn into Joe Lycett.
if only.
But you see what I mean, that there's a fear factor there that they don't want to go that far.
I'm not, honestly, I don't know. I'm not sure. I think Keir Starmer was chosen because he was, he promised that he would continue with the Corbyn manifesto that was really popular and the 10 pledges, I think it was 10 pledges that he made. I don't know that humour or charisma came into it. I think it was more about manifesto type promises. That said, depending on how Keir Starmer does over the next 2 years, maybe the Labour Party will need to start thinking about, actually, we need a leader that's going to connect on a more charismatic, witty, whatever basis. And if that is the person, if that is what they're after, no one massively springs to mind. I actually think Angela Rayner has got a good sense of humour. But my concern is that she is too different. She looks different. She sounds different. People aren't ready for her yet, which is a shame. I think she's great. I think she's really strong. I think when she's in PMQs and standing in for Keir Starmer, she absolutely annihilates the opposition. And she does so with humour, by the way, at times as well. Got a little bit of a cheekiness to her, which if it were Johnson, if it were a white male, you know, like Cameron, like Starmer, that looks like the next type of leader that we're all familiar with, I think she'd be in. But the fact is, she doesn't. She's a woman, she's a fiery redhead, and she's got an accent, and she's working class, which I think are all pluses, but other people, just too much change all at once.
Well, do you think as a country, we actually doff our caps too much to, and, you know, because we've had 20 prime ministers that went to Eton, for instance, you know, is there?
I despair at this, but I understand it. We are so deferential as a country. The reason I understand it, Paul, is because I was the person that used to tug my forelock and doff my cap, because I'm very working class background. And although for some reason on Twitter, people seem to think I'm not, I get called a posh bird. Someone accused me of being the daughter of a baronet and a public school girl the other day. I couldn't be further from that. Don't get me wrong, my accent has, you know, become more posh, if you want to call it that, as I've got older. But, like, you know, absolutely not. But when I was growing up, probably till about my early 30s, bear in mind I'm 37 now. I used to just assume that people who sounded posh were better than me, were more intelligent, were just, it was their God-given right to be in these positions of power. And only recently have I actually really realised, I mean, you just need to look at the likes of Jacob Rees-Mogg, for example, to learn that people are very much like Harry Enfield's character, Tim, nice but dim, completely dim. And yet they are taught this manner of delivering information and this conviction, this confidence, where people like me are like working class, go, oh God, he sounds like he knows what he's doing. And we just believe it. And we just go, yeah, trust you, go and do it.
I agree. And by the way, I think there is a correlation between confidence and humour. I think that if you are given that confidence by going to Eton and Oxbridge and everything, I think you are therefore perceived as more funny, even if you're not witty at all, by having the ability to stand there and expect the laugh. Mm-hmm. If you see what I mean, I think there's because humour, I mean, I spent 10 years of my life working the comedy store. Humour is about confidence as well. It's about being there and expecting everybody to go with you, because there's a saying in psychology that if you want anybody to go into any state, you have to go into that state first. Mm-hmm. So everything. But as I was listening to you talk, I thought, well, is Marina going to throw her hat into the political ring at any point?
I think the nature of my Twitter ramblings probably preclude me from ever being allowed to be a politician.
That didn't do Donald Trump any harm, did it?
This is true. Maybe I expect more from our politicians, though. I don't expect them to be quite as direct, shall we put it, or loose-lipped as I have been on my public platform.
But I actually think, because I used to live in America, I think we're about 5 to 7 years behind America. And you talked earlier on about populism. But suddenly, I think we might catch up, and somebody who's actually saying what they think might become very, very, very in vogue, if you like, at the time.
I think we're seeing that with this rising popularity of people like Mick Lynch and Eddie Dempsey, because actually we're hearing things come out now which are a bit dodgy about the links to this, that and the other. But if you just take them at face value about what they've been talking about recently regarding the strikes, the reason for strikes, the inequality in this country, and the need to redistribute wealth, they deliver it in such a way that's so direct. Also, I love the accents. I love their accents. And I think people need to learn that a Cockney accent doesn't mean that you're less intelligent or less deserving of the airtime or whatever than those with the posh accents. But what they've been doing is speaking without agenda, without fear, really directly. They're not afraid to deviate from a script, which sadly I think we see a lot with our politicians. Even Keir Starmer, I think you see this rigid sticking to a script. And the reason they've become almost hailed as heroes is because we're so starved of this straight talking approach now. So possibly there could be an appetite for someone just to come in and have that approach. If it's me, no, I can't see it. Honestly, Paul, it's a nice, thank you, very complimentary thing to say, but I can't see it. This is all very new to me, don't forget. This sort of political commentator thing only really kicked off in 2020 for me. It's all very, very new.
Never say never, Marina.
Never say never.
Yeah, it's interesting because I'm good friends with Paul Merton, who is one of the most intelligent people I know. I mean, such a sharp brain. But he's, I think, have I got news for you, he's been on for 30 plus years. And that whole thing with Paul and Ian is the classic British battle, isn't it? Between the working class and the perceived upper class. I think that's a very good indicator of actually how a bright working class, in inverted commas, person can be perceived. So maybe there is going to become a time when it is valued.
I hope so. And I hope this deference to the posh, whatever, the upper class, I hope it's something that disappears. But you know, it's there with our monarchy, right? It starts with the monarchy, filters down through, you know, our lords and our ladies and baronets and all the rest of it, and then, you know, keeps us prolies in our positions.
Well, it does go back to the Frost Report, doesn't it? I don't know, you're far too young to remember, but John Cleese and Ronnie Barker and Ronnie Corbett all standing in a row.
I do remember that.
You know, I'm upper class, I look down on him. I'm middle class, I look down on him, but I look up to him. And then Ronnie Corbett says the classic, I know my place.
Yep. And I think that's what we see, by the way, and the right wing rags, as I call them, perpetuate this, because they keep us warring and battling amongst ourselves down here. Well, this, my neighbor over there has got a bit more than me, or this immigrant over there, why should they have more than me, or this person on benefits. And actually, while we're here just quarreling amongst ourselves, we're distracted, and we're not looking up here at what our politicians are doing with their corruption and with their rule breaking, with their law breaking now, with their subverting and shattering of our democracy. And I think that's part of the plan.
It's what I call in the magicians, the magician's misdirection. It's constantly look over here. And I think that in a comedic way, Boris Johnson will talk about something like kippers. So the next day in the paper, everybody will talk about kippers, or just recently kettles, buy a new kettle.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, maybe he just talks about things with K's because he thinks K's are funny.
But he's nailed it there, because if you think about it, those are the takeaways that you and I have had from those speeches. Kippers,
yeah.
Kettles, other things beginning with K. The gaffes he makes, the Peppa Pig world, for example, we take something away from them. Whereas actually, if you think to other speeches that politicians give, we take nothing from them. So at least they're memorable. So he's on to something there. And I think that's why so many of our politicians, I think, make the, and not even just politicians, even just people in business, when they're giving business, like holding business meetings, it's almost like they assume this very professional stance and nothing can be funny and they just got to deliver details. But actually, I just think that's really hard for people to engage with. So even when I'm in my day job, I try to, there's nothing wrong with injecting levity into it, because actually that makes people relax a bit more. It makes people tune in a different way. And actually, if you set the tone and go, this is just going to be a conversation between us, it doesn't have to be full of jargon. It can be, we can laugh at this or the fact that we did this and it didn't work, it was a flop, so let's try this instead. And I think this is, it just allows for a much more fluid conversation and for things to be remembered rather than like fact, figure, data, bullet point, which doesn't do it for me.
Well, by the way, from a psychological perspective, you're 100% right, because it's emotions. And we go back to when you got fired up for politics in 2016. The reason that you got fired up was because of Brexit. But what you have to admit, I have to admit as well, is that they told a better story.
Mm-hmm.
They told a better emotional story that engaged people.
I mean, it was a fairy tale.
Of course it was. But
a fairy tale that never came true with unicorns and goblins and other mystical creatures. But they told a story, all right, and the Remain failed to do even that.
Yeah. And unfortunately, that's what wins. And what you were just saying, it's really, the trawl, your podcast, is scrolling through Twitter, as I said before, so we don't have to. But that will take a day of that, and then they'll introduce something else. So it's kind of like they've taken humor and used it as a weapon of mass distraction, if you like.
Yeah, I mean, it was Roger Rabbit, actually. So this probably goes back to when I was a kid. Roger Rabbit, Who Framed Roger Rabbit, great film. Got it as my first ever VHS videos as a gift for my birthday. And there is a line in it. So don't forget, why was Jessica Rabbit with Roger Rabbit? She was asked, and she said, "He makes me laugh. He makes me laugh." And there's a bit where Roger Rabbit said to the FBI agent, or whatever he is in it, the agent in it, he said, "Laughter is the most one of the most powerful things. Sometimes it's the only weapon you have." And I think that's so important. Roger Rabbit was on the money.
Well, I suppose the fact that you can take something dark and make light of it is what I would call a superpower, and also something that we need to have a resilience to everything that's going on. I mean, do you find yourself, because you do so many tweets, you do get so involved in this stuff, do you think that you have to have some humor to keep the resilience in there, to keep going against all these things that are hitting you every day?
It's a coping mechanism, genuinely. Yeah. It's a coping mechanism, because like many people have said, if you don't laugh, you will cry. If you look at what's happened to this country, if you look at the legacy, for example, of Boris Johnson, the fact that we are more divided, more impoverished, more isolated, more broken as an economy, just everything is worse now. And it doesn't look like it's getting better. I think this cost of living crisis, what it's going to do to people, what it's going to do to businesses, schools, hospitals, pubs, restaurants, whatever. Everything is really bleak. And then you've got everything with Brexit. Basically, it's not looking great.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
That's what I guess we do in the troll. We almost like look at what's going on and people's responses to it that just try and bring a little bit of levity to it. Now, some of it you can't, right? You can't bring levity to the fact that children are going hungry or that people will freeze, but you can almost laugh in despair at the state of play, because otherwise, what else can you do? It's too depressing. I don't think I'd be able to do this if all of my tweets, some of them are very serious, just trying to break down what's happening. But if all of it were very serious, I don't think it'd be sustainable. I think I'd be a very miserable person.
No, we had John O'Farrell on the podcast, who's a brilliant writer and very involved in politics as well. And he was originally on Have I Got News For You. He was on Spitting Image before that. And he says he despairs. And I wonder if somebody from the Twitter sphere who's really knows this stuff, he worries that by sharing a meme or a joke, part of us, and I think this as a psychologist, I worry as well, part of us thinks we've done the job by sharing it rather than marching on the streets or doing something. We've done something to break it and then we let go. And
yeah, I think John's onto something there. Social media allows us room to vent and get things off our chest. And is this perhaps why we're not mobilizing, we're not taking to the streets? Why were they able in an age of without social media, without this ability to connect, they were able to mobilize, they were able to have these poll tax riots, which changed the course of history. Now, like you say, we go on, I put a tweet out there, it gets a few thousand likes, and then we move on to the next scandal. But there is an appetite to do it. But you know what it is for me, honestly, Paul? I think it is everyone, we've marched, we've signed hundreds of petitions, I've spoken at protests. Nothing has any impact anymore. I mean, you have to just look to the heart of government and look at some of the breaking of ministerial code, for example, the fact that there's this good chap's guide of government that is completely has been annihilated, basically rewriting of rules. Nothing matters anymore. So people have lost faith that their action is going to do anything. So what do? We take to Twitter. We have a moan, a whinge, a joke, and we get through it.
Yeah, but is that it then? Are we going to? Have we been nullified on some level by doing this and going, look at us? We're thousands of us have liked this tweet.
And do you know what it is as well, Paul? We've only got so much capacity for this stuff. You know, everyone's got their lives they're dealing with. They're dealing with their bills, their kids, their jobs, wanting to watch Coronation Street, wanting to watch their Netflix series. they can only take on so much. And this is part of, don't forget, this was Johnson's strategy, probably inspired by, what's his name? The guy, Bannon, who said... Steve Bannon, who said, flood the zone with shit. I hope that's okay to say on the podcast. Which is a great strategy, because when there's so much stuff going on, it's hard to know what to turn your attention to, because if you focus too much on this, then before you know it, the next scandal has started, playing out. And Boris Johnson was interviewed on this. An interview surfaced actually a few months ago. I shared it myself, that he said his strategy when he became leader would be to make so many gaffes that basically the media wouldn't know what to focus on. And while they're all like in chaos, not knowing what to do, he would, I quote, drop depth charges. I think that was the term he used, so he could just go off and do what he needed to do. And essentially, that's what he's done.
Well, it's the same. I mean, Steve Bannon advised Trump. Steve Bannon advised Orban in Hungary. Steve Bannon was said to, I don't want to get in into it, to have advised some people in the Tory party. I don't know if it was Boris Johnson, but it's the same thing. And it's, I hate to use the word clever, but it's a clever strategy if you don't, if you just want to muddy the waters.
Yeah, it's a manipulative strategy.
A manipulative is a better word.
I think clever gives it too much credit. It's very manipulative. And sadly, what we've learnt is we as a British public can be very easily manipulated.
Yeah. Gosh.
It's like an abusive relationship, though, isn't it, if you think about it? It's like we can get laughed into bed by this guy with funny hair and, we think he's going to be, good for a pint. And then he will lie to us and lie to us. And we've actually gone, he lies. It's fine. It's just what he does. And we're just okay with that now. And I just think it's bananas that as a country, we've come to accept that that's okay from our politicians.
So do you think it's like Stockholm syndrome? We've started to learn to love that.
Yeah. Yeah. It's quite sad, really, isn't it? And terrifying.
Gosh. Well, let's lighten it up on the Humorology podcast.
It is a Humorology podcast, I'm so sorry. I'm taking the tone down.
No, it's wonderful. I love it.
Exactly. And another thing you've got to laugh about, but what are we doing to ourselves as a country? I do often think, what must other countries think when they look at us? We impose economic sanctions on ourselves. We pump shit into our own waters. We have some of the highest taxes, the highest transport costs, the highest childcare costs. We sign trade deals with other countries that ruin our own industries, fishing, farming. What must people think of us?
Yeah, it's going well, isn't it?
It's going fabulously.
You're right, we do have to laugh. Gosh, oh, well, that's cheered me up no end. Thanks, Maureen.
You're welcome. I did say, I think there is a gap in the market for a badge or something you can wear if you're travelling on the continent or indeed anywhere in the world that says, I'm not one of those morons that voted Brexit or I'm not one of those idiots that voted Tory. Like, I think there should be something you can use or have. Because I was in France recently and I don't want to hear my accent and assume I'm some, Brexit voting moron.
Yeah, I was I was in Budapest and I nearly got punched for being an English football hooligan, first of all, which, as you can see, I look like a football hooligan because and I had to go up to a very big bloke and say, I'm Scottish and Hungarian.
What were you doing to make him think that, Paul?
I don't know. He just heard me and my son and my brother who lives in Hungary talking, and we were talking about football. And it was, and he just automatically made this leap. He'd had a couple of drinks at the same time. So what makes you laugh, Marina?
What makes me laugh? I think I do love British humour. I do love sort of very dry, witty people, sarcasm, that type of thing. When I was younger, it was your typical sort of slapstick stuff. I used to love a bit of, You've Been Framed, Beatles About, that type of thing. Fawlty Towers, Only Fools and Horses still makes me laugh now. My favourite Only Fools, and there's that bit. My favourite, though, episode of Only Fools and Horses is... Tony, what's the guy, the entertainer, and he can't pronounce his R's when he's singing on stage. Really, and he does crying.
Why you?
That is my favourite episode. Every time I see that, it makes me laugh. I think it's
And it's an Italian name, isn't it? It's Tony.
Yes.
Oh.
But even though that's pretty, you know, when he takes off the clothes and he's just got that one triangle of deep tan and he's got the wig and he's got the medallion, and it's brilliant, actually.
No, it's a great episode. And so now we've talked, you're on the borders of politics all the time listening to it, and we've talked about certain people not being funny, but do you think everybody has the potential to be funny?
I think they do if they have the confidence, like you say, because I think it requires a degree of confidence to be funny, because you're putting yourself out there not to be funny. And to put out a joke and not be laughed at, a bit like my cousin's husband. He's got a hit rate of about, I'd say, 10%. He puts out 10 jokes, maybe one will like land. But actually, it's quite nice to be in his company, because at least you know they're coming, even if they're not that funny all the time. Even the attempt is funny. But you've got to have confidence to do that, because if a joke doesn't land, it can be quite orcs. But also, I think you need to be in a good place mentally to be able to laugh a bit easier. I know, for example, if you're having a bad day, and I watched that series of Only Fools and Horses that I mentioned, it's harder to laugh than if I've had a good day and I watched that episode of Only Fools and Horses.
Can it actually change you, though? I mean, do you put it on as, in inverted commas, therapy? So, you know, the laughter therapy, that you actually put something that you know is guaranteed to shift your state?
Do you know what? If I had more time, I probably would have something that I would turn to for laughter therapy. But at the moment, every second, every minute is of the essence. So sadly, I don't have that luxury.
Well, I prescribe the Humorology podcast 3 times a week.
Noted.
Trust me, I'm a doctor. So if I asked you to write, because you work in business, you've worked in the city thing, and if I asked you to write a business case for humour, i.e. why should humour be valued in business? Or what would you include in that business case?
If you're writing a business case, you're trying to convince people that it's worth investment, right? There's going to be a return on investment. And what I would say is that humour will give you the best return, because you'll be able to take people on a journey with you. They'll be able to buy into whatever it is you're trying to do with them, whether it's a new project or whatever. And I also think it means people will be receptive, whether that's your stakeholders or even the people you are delivering the product to, your customers, for example. So I would say there's absolutely a business case for it. But if it fits... like there's nothing worse sometimes than seeing someone try to be funny. Like, you know, you look at David Brent as a character in The Office, right? An absolutely stellar character. Tried desperately to be funny at moments when it wasn't appropriate. He couldn't read the room. The room's not ready for a joke, or they're not warm to him. So then it's never going to land. So I think there's almost like a set of ingredients. The timing needs to be right for humour. And I think that's down to emotional intelligence, to understand when is the right time to be funny.
Do you think that includes listening? I mean, and I'm not just talking with the ears, I'm talking with the eyes. That's what I think emotional intelligence is reading the person, reading the room, as you said.
Absolutely. And I think not enough people listen. I mean, my husband would probably say I'm terrible at listening. My husband is a real thinker, and he's very analytical. And sometimes I, while waiting for him to reach his conclusions, I sort of jump in and I finish his sentences for him, which he finds really irritating. I don't know. I think emotional intelligence is really important. And yes, use your ears in the ratio that you were given them. You've been given 2 ears and 1 mouth. Use them in that ratio.
I think we might have shared the same grandmother.
Yeah.
My grandmother said exactly the same to me. God gave you two ears and one mouth in that ratio for a reason. And look at both of us. How much do we both talk?
I know, I know. We didn't listen. We didn't pay attention. Sorry, Nonna.
Marina, we've reached a part of the show which we like to call quick fire questions. Sounds you good. Can't wait, can you?
No, brilliant.
Quick fire questions.
Who is the funniest business person that you've met?
Do you know what I would say? So actually, I back in the day, in 2006, I did a season working abroad for Club 1830. Now, yes. Now, I wasn't a holiday rep. I think I need to caveat, but I was the office girl in Zante. And my boss and the director of the resort at the time was a guy called, we called him Screech. And he was one of the best bosses I've had. Brilliant leadership style, but also one of the funniest men I have ever met, and I'm still in contact with him now many years later. So for me, he would be the ultimate. In fact, he's a perfect example of a boss who was respected, who was firm, that everyone wanted to do really well for, work really hard for, because he was such fun to be around.
And his name was really Screech.
He was known as Screech, but Steve Alice is his name. Yes.
Okay, I was thinking that's a perfect comedy name.
Well, he used to look like Screech from Saved by the Bell. That's how he got how he got his name.
Well, Club 1830, and I don't know if we could actually use this gag anymore because it was so of its time, but their advertising campaigns were legendary. And that there was an advertising campaign in London which just had a huge billboard which just had the words, spend 2 weeks on some bloke's boat. Which, brilliant. For those of us who don't know Cockney rhyming slang, go and look it up.
Yeah, exactly. Joe, it's a shame. Their bar crawls and their cabarets and their boat parties were legendary. Legendary.
Yeah, I never got to go. So,
and I'm so glad that they're not around anymore because I'm the mother of a son now and I would want him going nowhere near that type of holiday.
Well, I have a 21-year-old son, so if they were, I'm pretty sure he'd be
good
there.
Luck.
What book makes you laugh?
This is a really lame one, but I used to love the Garfield books. You know, the little Garfield books? Just thought, again, really dry. And I loved Garfield's character. And he was just such a miserable, a bit like Jack D, but in the cat world, miserable, sort of hilarious, dry, sort of thinking, by the way. He was never talking. He was always thinking. But I used to love those books as a kid and I collected them. I think that shows you that now I don't read funny books. I only read very serious books. If you look at the stash on my bedside table, it's all about why we get the worst politicians and the death of democracy and the tyranny of merit. So nothing particularly humorous in my reading collection right now. Maybe I need to change that, Paul.
Time for some Garfield.
Yeah, I think so. I'll get them back. I'll go to Mum and Dad's house and I'll pick them up from my shelf.
What film makes you laugh?
The Wedding Singer I really liked. I loved, is it John? What's his name? John Buscemi? Who's the character? Who's the actor? Yeah, I think his character in that is absolutely brilliant. What else? I can't think now. Again, I need to start doing more things with levity in them because I think I'm becoming far too serious.
You do have a small child as well.
This is true.
And a job and have taken Twitter by storm and a podcast and TV.
I've got another one due in 6 weeks, Paul.
A podcast or a child?
A child. I've got another child. The next podcast is out next week. Thank you very much. Let's all go.
Oh, that's wonderful. And do we know what's coming, or is it a surprise?
We do. So I've got a little boy who is 21 months, and this is a little girl. So I've got the full compliment.
Oh, fantastic.
I know.
Oh, please tell me that's a Humorology podcast exclusive.
The fact that it's the girl is, actually, not the fact that I'm having a baby, but yes, it is.
Oh, well, congratulations. That's lovely news. That's really sweet. Oh, that's really... We're going to take a complete shift to the other side now, and I'm going to ask a question that I ask all my guests, which is, what's not funny?
What's not funny, I think, is when I think there's certain times people like, and don't get me wrong, he can be funny, but if you look at people like Frankie Boyle, who sometimes push a little bit too far in a certain direction, and Ricky Gervais has actually been guilty of this as well. And I am a big fan of Ricky Gervais. I've been to see him a few times. The same as Jimmy Carr. They've all got the potential to just go a few too many inches below the belt. And it's more of a shock than a laugh. And so I think that that's where the, I think there are certain things you just don't talk about when it's, you know, disabilities, or if we saw, just like we saw at the it was the Oscars, where we saw Chris Rock. Yeah, take the piss out of alopecia. For me, I think it's absolutely fine to take the piss out of people for choices they make, for their behavior, things that they have control over. I don't know that it's funny to take the piss out of people for things that they don't have in their control, like disabilities or like hair loss, for example, or weight, things like that, as being, or their appearance. This actually thing on Twitter I really don't like is that if I go at someone like a Tory MP, even Boris Johnson, whoever, I never comment on their appearance. I think there's just certain things that are off limits. There is enough to go on there to insult without having to touch upon someone's appearance. So I think things like that are probably just not that funny.
Yeah, I mean, coming from a comedy background, my only issue with that is this is a personal thing, and we can talk about punching up, punching down, which I think is what you're talking about. But who's going to police this stuff? I mean, I would argue that you have to allow this.
Of course. It's a supply and demand thing, right? So,
and it's also a personal opinion, which is what the question's about, is personally, yeah, you find those things slightly, yeah, difficult.
And this is what's wonderful, right? I find them difficult. I just don't enjoy them particularly. So what do I do? I don't watch them. I don't go to see Frankie Boyle. Although I think he's actually toned himself down, and I quite like sometimes his takedowns of the Tory party. I won't go and see people like that if I think they're a bit too... It's a bit like... I mean, obviously, Jim Davidson is not even that funny, but I wouldn't go and see him because of certain... I just think his jokes are shit, and also he's a right-wing tosspot. So, I've got the choice. I'm not saying he should be cancelled at all. And in fact, I don't like this cancel culture, because it flies in the face of free speech. And if we're going to really be bastions of free speech, it needs to be free for people that we think are abhorrent, as well as those that we think are on side.
Well, I couldn't agree more. And it's, I mean, I don't mind when people say, personally, I don't like this, you know, but once we get into somebody is in charge of deciding what we can and cannot hear, then we're in a very, very tricky situation.
Which is the Tory party now. We've now got this person, I think they've just put up, given a role to someone just last week, who is now policing who can and can't speak at universities. Is that...
Really?
Who can and can't be platformed at universities, falls to a new recruit. So, free speech when it suits, basically.
Yeah, well, I think that's really what's not funny, is people who actually try and get in the way of free speech.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's a personal thing. What word makes you laugh, Marina?
Oh, gosh. Do other people feel on the spot when you ask these questions? Or just me?
No, it's fine. It's just, you know, you don't even have to answer it. It's just like, with a 21-month-old child, soon the word poo is going to make you laugh quite a lot.
He's started being quite funny, but he uses a word that's not funny in a funny way. Bear in mind, he is 20 months old. He's only just grasping a few words.
Yeah.
He's managed to, it's almost like he's taking the piss out of me when he does this. He's learned how to say don't back to me. And he goes, don't, as if he's just mocking me. And then he goes and does what I tell him not to do anyway, like drop his porridge on the floor. Don't, mummy, don't. So that's rather funny.
There you go, the word don't. You're the first person ever to choose the word don't. But I will tell you an interesting, I hope it's interesting fact about don't, because don't in psychological terms is a negation. And when you tell children, don't drop your porridge on the floor, they hear drop your porridge on the floor, and then they hear don't.
Oh, goodness. What do I say to him then? What's the word? What's the magic
keep
word
your porridge in your bowl. You see what I mean? It's about turning that around. And everything. So in psychological terms, it's called a negation, that you can't negate. And by the way, you know, if you're going in to negotiate with your boss, don't think about giving me a huge rise. You know, actually works in that way as well.
Oh, wow. Okay. Me and you might have to have a catch up afterwards about parenting.
Okay.
A one-to-one session.
What sound makes you laugh?
This is so juvenile, but when my little one breaks wind, we laugh very much because he finds it so funny and so I find it funny, but don't enjoy it when adults do it around. My brother is very free and loose with it. You know, he's 3 years older than me, he's 40 something, and he finds it hilarious when he does it around the table. I'm like, that's not, you know, not when we're eating. But when my son does it, he's 21 months and, you know, cute, that's fine.
Yeah, and it's the funniest thing in the world to a child. Yeah. And then when they laugh, it's just, you know, music, you're anchored. It? Oh, it's music, and you know, and that's probably the sound as well that makes in tandem with the farts. But farts, pretty much everybody thinks
we never grow out of that, do we?
No, farts are always funny.
Although we don't in my marriage, we don't do that in front of each other in our marriage. Retain an air of mystery.
Good idea. Yeah, definitely a good idea. So would you rather be considered clever or funny?
Does it have to be an either or?
No, there are no rules on the Humorology podcast.
Oh, because you don't just want to be funny, but like a douchebag. So if I had to pick one, I'd say clever.
Yeah. But then you see most people, well, just about all people. I've never met a comedian who isn't also clever.
No, you have to be. I think you have to be. Yeah.
So it's kind of a trick question, really, isn't it? Mm.
Yeah.
But if you can be funny, you're pretty much guaranteed that you're firing some really good neurons in your brain.
Yeah.
Because
the quick-witted people, for me, there's a real attractiveness about it. There's a like humour, you know, the ability to laugh people into bed. It's because it is so attractive. There is, you're right, there is an intelligence thing there, the quick-witted thing. It's being able to deliver, to captivate people. And to make someone laugh is a real, it's a powerful thing.
Well, what you're doing is you're making them do an involuntary act. Mm-hmm. So that's actually quite telling, isn't it? Because then if you think in the biological terms, a biological imperative, aren't you going to choose somebody who is has superpowers, if you like?
Yeah, I have, Paul, back in the day, I have fancied some appalling looking men who were just very funny, but just, God, nothing to look at all, probably. It feels harsh, but you know, a one or two on the scale. Oh, really fancied them because they were funny. Mind you, well, I don't think women have that in reverse, do they?
No, I don't. Well, no, that's because men are very, very thin-skinned.
Shallow is the word.
Shallow is the word I'm looking for. But thank you for pointing it out as well. just so we're clear, not all men.
Oh, not all hashtag or not asterisk not all men.
And finally, Marina, desert island gags. You can only take one joke with you to a desert island. What is it?
I've got one, but again, it's so juvenile and it's from my youth, but it's just one that sticks in my head and is probably not funny at all. But the number naught and the number eight are walking down the street. And the number naught turns to number eight and says, "Why are you wearing your belt so tight?" I don't know why. I loved that one since I was a kid. Just cute and just innocent.
Oh, it is cute. And I actually didn't see it coming. I never heard that gag. And I think I've heard most of them. Marina Perkis, thank you so much for being a wonderful guest with a great gag on the Humorology podcast.
Thank you for having me on, Paul.
The Humorology podcast was hosted by Paul Barros, produced by David Rose, music by Steve Hayworth, creative direction by Les Hughes, and additional research by Helen Sykes. Please remember to subscribe, like, and leave a review wherever you get your podcasts. This has been a Big Sky production.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.